It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. According to findings released this week by the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, there is even more certainty that global warming is being caused by the accumulation of carbon emissions in Earth's atmosphere. In other words, global warming is man-made, and the majority of scientists who support that idea is now up to 95%. Yet the issue has been so politicized that the U.S. government hasn't been able to do much, if anything, to reduce emissions levels. The science and politics of global warming is the topic of a lecture being given today by internationally renowned climatologist Raymond Bradley as part of Pitt's University Honors College Climate Change Series. Dr. Bradley is a distinguished university professor and the director of the climate system at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, and he has served as an advisor for the U.S., Swiss, Swedish, and U.K. National Science Foundations. And he is scheduled to join us by phone from the Pitt campus, and we will make an effort to get him to join us here shortly, but at this point, we do not have contact with Dr. Bradley. I should mention that if you have a comment or question, when we do get our guest on the line, you can call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Also, our email address is essphgh@wesa.fm. And you can always reach us on Twitter at ESSPGH and follow the conversation at #EPLive. What do you think Congress needs to do about climate change? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. We do have the aforementioned renowned climatologist Raymond Bradley on the line with us from the University of Pittsburgh. Again, he is giving a lecture today at the University of Pittsburgh as part of Pitt's Climate Change Series, University Honors College Climate Change Series. Dr. Bradley, joining us by phone from the Pitt campus. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you very much.
And again, if you have a comment or question for our guest, you can call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address, essphgh@wesa.fm. And you can reach us on Twitter at essphgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. What do you think Congress needs to do about climate change? 412-246-2002. Dr. Bradley, let's begin by having you tell us what your research focuses on when it comes to climate change.
Now, my research has always been trying to understand how climate is varied and why, put simply. And so I've been focused mostly on understanding the natural factors that control climate variability, things like volcanic eruptions and changes in solar output, and more recently, of course, trying to understand the effects of human beings on the climate system, the issues of global warming.
What are the things, what is the evidence that proves that global warming is man-made?
Well, certainly we know that the temperatures have risen over the last 100 years, more specifically or more rapidly in the last 50 years. We know from basic principles that when you put greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, like carbon dioxide and methane and nitrous oxide, that will tend to trap more heat in the system. So from first principles, we would expect that to happen. And then we can use computer models to simulate how the climate system works. And we can take those models and run them with or without greenhouse gases. When we run them without the greenhouse gases, we don't see the warming that we've observed. When we add the greenhouse gases, we get a pretty good fit to what's actually happened. So that's the primary source of understanding at this point.
So the science is there, and according to this new UN report, what are we going to see happening to our environment as a result of global warming and a lack of environmental stewardship?
Yes, unfortunately, there is a lack of environmental stewardship on a national and an international level. Well, the primary effect we're going to see is temperatures are going to continue to rise. And we tend to focus on temperature, but in fact, perhaps some of the more significant impacts will be associated with changes in rainfall patterns, because as you heat up the Earth, you put more energy into the system, and you'll change the circulation of the overall atmospheric circulation. So places that have in the past had abundant rainfall may become drier, and elsewhere they may get additional rainfall, including more extreme types of rainfall, more heavy bouts of rainfall, more extreme weather conditions, and so on. So primarily it'll be a change in the temperature patterns around the world, with everywhere getting warmer. And
we're seeing that already, aren't we?
We've seen it already, but it will continue and it will accelerate unless we get a handle on controlling the emissions of greenhouse gases.
So if the IPCC document is a wake-up call for governments around the world to address the challenge of climate change, what should the response from our government be?
Well, this is the fifth IPCC report. They come out every few years, and they are an assessment of the state of the science. So they're not policy, the phrase they use is they're not policy prescriptive. So they're really just a summary of what scientists understand about what's happening. And then they sort of hand off that report to the policymakers and say, okay, now, if you understand what's happening and what's likely to happen, it's up to you to come up with policies that will address this issue. And the primary issue we have to do is somehow reduce our emissions of greenhouse gases. And that inevitably involves controls on emissions from power plants that are burning coal, especially, making our use of energy much more efficient. We waste an amazing amount of energy unnecessarily, and making transportation systems more efficient, particularly vehicles, cars, and improving public transportation, and so on.
How do we, and in terms of the scientists who are trying to adjust the thinking and to convince governments and political leaders that we need to change our way of thinking, how do you make that case, particularly in a region like this in Western Pennsylvania, where so much of the economy traditionally has been based on things like coal that that it's been proven are harmful, create emissions that are harmful to the environment, and thus, based on what this report is telling us, creates global warming? How do you, when it comes to coming up with an argument to counteract the economic concerns, how do you make your case?
Well, I think, unfortunately, the argument has been made that reducing emissions will have significant negative economic consequences. And there have been many, many studies that have shown that that is not the case. It certainly is the case that with the development of new technologies, new approaches to the way we use energy, the strategies of reducing the amount of energy that we waste, these are good for the economy. I mean, in a simple sense, if it takes you, 10 gallons of gas to get from A to B, and you can do the same trip with 5 gallons of gas, then you've got, $18 in your pocket that you wouldn't otherwise have. So making our transportation systems, our vehicles more efficient, if we can heat our homes, with 500 gallons of oil instead of 1,000, these are economic benefits to everybody. Now, that doesn't mean there won't be regional consequences, because obviously industries will have to flourish and be developed in different areas. So where coal mining was once the primary driver of the economy, there should be investment in other approaches to provide employment for people. And I think it will, in the big picture, it will definitely be an economic boon to the United States. Whoever develops the technology of the future will be a winner.
It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is climatologist Raymond Bradley, a distinguished professor at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, who is in Pittsburgh to give an address as part of Pitt's University Honors College Climate Change Series. If you'd like to take part in the conversation, 412-246-2002, the number to call, 412-246-2002. What do you think Congress needs to do about climate change? Maybe you're one of those who thinks they don't need to do anything at all. Certainly not much is getting done on Capitol Hill these days with the government shutdown, but at some point Congress will have to face this issue. What is the course of action you think Congress should take? 412-246-2002, the number to call. And talking with our guest climatologist Raymond Bradley, Dr. Bradley, why is U.S. legislation to reduce emission levels stalled at the moment?
Well, you just got to pick up the newspaper and see what's happening in Washington. We have a complete dysfunctional political system right now where compromise is not a word in their vocabulary. So in terms of trying to get some sensible policies out of Washington, I'm afraid it's a pretty difficult path to beat at the moment. The president has done what he can to promote the idea of energy conservation and job growth through the executive branch, but trying to get anything through the Congress at the moment is a hopeless task. But I think we shouldn't focus too much on the federal government because we know that that's dysfunctional, but there's an awful lot
happening. But isn't that where the legislation has to come from?
Well, it does, certain things anyway. And they did pass, for example, they passed legislation to require car companies to improve the mileage on their vehicles. And that is having already, everybody can see the effects of that with more and more hybrids, more better mileage that's available in new cars and so on. And that's destined to increase rapidly over the next 10 or 15 years. I believe the goal is an average fleet mileage of 55 miles per gallon. Just to give you an example, I have a 22-year-old car that I drive, gets 28 miles to the gallon. And I go and look at a new car today, and it's telling me, well, I can get 30 miles to the gallon. So there's not a hell of a lot that's happened in the last 22 years in terms of vehicle efficiency. Compare that with computers. Who would use a 22-year-old computer? Just the tech, you know, we've stagnated because we had a lack of government incentives to improve the mileage standards in vehicles. So that's been happening. But if you look around the country on the state level, there's an awful lot happening at local levels. You can see it in businesses. You can see it in universities, in schools. People are focusing on how they can reduce their energy use, how they can become more energy efficient. They're saving money. That's putting money back into the economy, into people's personal budgets. So there's a lot happening around the U.S. In Massachusetts, in California, and probably in Pennsylvania, there are government policies that are being implemented too at the state level. So that's a positive thing, I think.
Dr. Bradley, have you been able to figure out why this issue has become so politicized, why it is so important for some science deniers to get out front and say, this is not man-made, this is not something that we can control, global warming?
I speak from my own personal position now. I'm not as a climate scientist per se, but you know, there's people who think that the Earth is 6,000 years old. There's people who don't believe in evolution. There's even the Flat Earth Society. So there's always going to be people who you can't convince about the basic facts that are presented before them. Now, there are people who genuinely believe, I think George Soros calls them market fundamentalists, who genuinely believe that all government regulation is bad and that the economy would be better off without any restrictions on the private sector, on capitalism.
So how do you work around those people?
Well, I think you have to try to move to the people who are in the middle. I mean, I don't think there's any way I can convince 15% of the population that global warming is even happening. They're just determined not to accept the fact. So there's nothing I can do to convince those people. But there's a large group of people in the United States who are truly concerned about global warming, who also wish that the government would take this matter seriously. The United States has a very strong history of environmental protection, and I think people value the importance of a clean environment, and they worry about the future for their kids and grandchildren, and rightly so.
What are the potential ramifications of political inaction on future climate change?
Well, if there is complete inaction, then the emissions will continue to rise, and the impacts on our climate system will be relentless, and it will get warmer. We'll have more extreme weather conditions. Sea level will rise, and we just have to hope that we don't run into some unforeseen thresholds in the climate system that we may not fully understand. A famous climate scientist once said that we're poking the dragon with a sharp stick, and we have to be careful that we don't push the system over some cliff. We know a lot about the climate system, but we can look back in the past and we can see that there were times when everything suddenly went haywire, and we just got to be careful we're conducting a gigantic experiment on the planetary scale. We got to be very cautious about what we do.
Raymond Bradley, Distinguished University Professor at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
We will take a break and return with more of Essential Pittsburgh. This is 90.5 WESA.